Hello and welcome to episode 49 of Dynasty's Child, the flagship fantasy baseball podcast of the Dynasty Guru. I am your host, Keaton DeRocher, and with me, as always, Patrick Magnus. You can follow him on Twitter, at The Green Magnus. Patrick, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Keaton. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
You know, I'm getting through. I've got some DayQuil. I'm ready to power through this.
Yeah, you're gonna be the mostest hostess.
Yeah. All right. And joining us in place of Ian is a special guest, fellow TDG contributor and Over the Monster contributor, Jake Devereaux. You can find him on Twitter at Jake Dev, I believe, is his tag.
And, at Dev Jake, actually.
Dev Jake, that's yep. The one. And Jake, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, glad that this time I was able to be on the pod that you were helping fill in for, so this will be fun. Tonight on the show, we'll do all our usual junk. We'll also discuss some news from around the major leagues, do a little bit of a check-in on TDGX2, and our trying to wrap up our in-or-out series for you folks who still haven't hit your trade deadline yet. And if you have any questions for us, you can submit them via the Facebook group, Fantasy Baseball subreddit, Twitter at Dynasty Child, or email dynastychildspod@gmail.com. So, a couple transactions to speak of. A couple waiver trades. Matt Adams, Big City, headed back to St. Louis, and Daniel Murphy headed to Chicago. Patrick, which one of those intrigues you the most?
I mean, Daniel Murphy is obviously the more intriguing option here for Dynasty and fantasy purposes. Matt Adams is just kind of, I mean, he is what he is. He's a big boy that can hit the ball far, but seems to be only able to hit right-handed pitching, I think. I don't know. But he can't hit, he can only hit one side. So he's fairly limited, a bench bat at most. Daniel Murphy is and has been a very good baseball player. I don't know how much he has left in the tank. And I also don't know how he's going to be utilized by the Cubs on a daily basis because they're already sort of overwhelmed with their middle infield, but should be interesting to watch. And also the fan reaction to Murphy has been, you know, somewhat interesting with their kind of lack of acceptance of him due to his homophobic comments he's made in the past. So, yeah, that one definitely is more interesting to me.
Jake, do you have any interest in Matt Adams in St. Louis?
I don't have a ton of interest in Adams in St. Louis. I think he's had a good year this year, so that's sort of a redeeming thing about him. I think that what St. Louis is doing right now is super interesting, with them making up all this ground and being right in the thick of the playoff race. But his first go-around in St. Louis didn't work out that great, so I guess I'm not super intrigued. I'm much more intrigued by the Daniel Murphy to Chicago thing, and I own a lot of stock in Daniel Murphy, so I'm looking forward to that. And I think, you know, the infield situation is really muddled over there, but someone with the talent of Daniel Murphy is going to have to find a way to get his bat in the lineup every day. And, you know, the Cubs, surprisingly enough, have the best record in the National League after, you know, not being super impressive for a lot of the year. So I think that's interesting, and he's a guy who could certainly have huge implications for the playoffs for both real life and fantasy.
And I can't remember who I was talking to, but I was talking to somebody after the trade happened, and my guess was that Murphy's going to get the bulk of the playing time at second, Baez is going to get the bulk of the playing time at short, and Russell is just going to end up being turned into a bench bat for the stretch run. I have not checked in the last few games to see if that was actually the case or not, but that was just my prediction for how that was going to go.
Wasn't one of those guys injured? Like, I think maybe it was Russell, or someone was banged up a little bit, so they were sort of resting them, but I agree with you. I mean, Russell hasn't done anything aside from play good defense to warrant him being in the lineup, and Baez is a totally passable shortstop in his own right, so that makes a whole lot more sense to me.
Baez is one of my favorite players in all of the game to watch. I enjoy him. Moving on to the injuries. To the DL, Buster Posey is having season-ending hip surgery to remove bone spurs. Oh, also removing bone spurs from his labrum. That is a lot of stuff to be going on to a part-time catcher, but a most-of-the-time catcher. What do you guys see Patrick as his value going forward next year and beyond? Does this significantly drop him in the catcher rankings at all?
Yeah, it's got to. It's unfortunate, too, because, you know, we do this piece called the Triple Play, and when we got to the team San Francisco...
Never heard of it. Sorry.
No? Never heard of it? It's a great piece. We write about a hitter, a pitcher, and a prospect. And we just finished it, Keaton. We finished the Triple Play.
It's over.
Hold on. We're going to party all the time now. We don't have to grind through any place. Anyways, sorry, I was saving it for that moment to celebrate being done with the Triple Play.
That was a great moment. So how does that relate to Buster Posey?
Well, it relates to Buster Posey in the sense that I wrote about how I thought he was actually an obtainable dynasty catcher asset, in the sense that he had really avoided any serious injuries behind the plate except for the big one where they changed the rules basically for him. When he was run over, and I believe he broke his leg. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that changed everything. But beyond that injury, he's remained remarkably healthy. And so my idea for Buster Posey was you could probably get him in a dynasty pretty cheap. And if you purchased him for cheap, he was probably going to give you I think the contract he's on with San Francisco is like 4 more years. And so he was, I imagined him playing behind the plate for 4 more years and at least putting up strong ratios. If, you know, his power is dissipating, but I thought he was going to give you strong ratios. But another injury and hip injury, how much more can he do behind the plate? I just don't know. You know, what I think he's going to be 31 next year. That worries me.
Yeah, I'm worried about how much he's actually going to catch going forward as well. But obviously, it's something just to monitor going into next season and see what happens, because they still have Braden Belt at first, so it's not like he's going to take at bats away from Belt, and they don't have a DH, so he's got to go somewhere. So they may have to end up being, you know, forced to play him at catcher just to get him in the lineup. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on going forward.
Who do they usually play at DH right now? That's what I'm curious about. I don't know. And by the way, he'll be 30.
Who is San Francisco's DH?
It's a National League club,
that
sir.
That doesn't make any sense. Oh, goodness, you guys.
So I own a bunch of shares of Posey, and I am worried about this quite a bit, but I'm not, like, I don't think I'm going to be selling off Posey in any of the leagues where I own him, just because his value is low right now. Throughout this whole injury process, he did actually post decent ratios. Like Patrick said, his power is, you know, waned to the point where it's almost not there, but he still hits for average and gets on base. And let's not forget, catcher is a dumpster fire. So even if you get some extremely reduced version of Buster Posey, who doesn't hit for power anymore but still bats 300, like, you're going to run into a couple, like, late-life Yadier Molina seasons from him, which is useful for fantasy purposes. So, I don't know. I still think that he's going to have a decent amount of value, and I think I might use this as an opportunity to buy, not sell, on Buster Posey.
So you're not worried about, like, catcher eligibility for him in the future? I mean, I know he's not going to replace
him. No, I'm not, because he's just... he's a ridiculously good catcher, and I know that the physical issues could take away from some of that time, but like Keaton said, Belt's awesome at first base, so he's not going to be taking time there. You know, a good chunk of his value as a player has been tied to his defense, so I think that even in a reduced state, he's going to be a really valuable game caller and pitch framer and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that stuff all makes sense. I think I kind of agree with Jake. It's probably an opportunity to check in.
They've got Belt locked up for quite a while, too. So, yeah. He can play some outfield, though. I don't know how great he is in the outfield, but I believe they've played him in the outfield before, but still. Yeah. Poor Posey. Hope he comes back strong. T's and P's.
Yeah, so Mike Trout is returning from his injury. He was activated from the DL last night. And congratulations to all those in a playoff hunt who have Mike Trout back.
I actually know what that note is.
Okay, what is that note?
So Mike Trout, in order to honor his brother-in-law who died, wore a Dot Cox jersey, which was his name. So instead of the Players Weekend jersey that said kid with like three eyes, he honored the death of his brother-in-law this weekend.
Ah, okay.
Yep.
That's a lot more clear than Adam's note. Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem.
It's a shame that Jake does not like Players Weekend.
Are we getting into that now?
Well, I mean, I brought it up.
All right. So Jake, why don't you state your position here?
So I don't want to be a Debbie Downer here, but I just feel like, by and large, this Players Weekend stuff just doesn't go sort of the way that the commissioner's office imagines it to. I think that, like, they have this idea that they're going to have these cool jerseys with these awesome nicknames and people are going to fall in love with the personality of all these players. And then, like, what you actually get on the field is a bunch of nicknames that, like, basically no one understands if they even, like, care to look at these uniforms. And then some of them just suck. They're just, like, shortened versions of the players' names, like Jackie Bradley Jr. being JBJ, or, like, Ian Kinsler for the Red Sox being Bootsy. And, like, to look up why he has the nickname Bootsy, you have to go back to him having a foot injury and his manager in Arlington at the time thinking that it was funny that he was wearing a boot, and so his name is Bootsy. Like, that's a really shitty story for a nickname. So by and large, I just think they're uninspired. The coolest thing about the weekend for me has been seeing weird colored jerseys and bats and shoes, but not the creativity of players. So occasionally you get a good one. You know, Felipe Vasquez with Nightmare was awesome last year. But I don't know, just seems forced and not as cool as they think it is. It's like a really great joke that you tell in your head and it's so funny, and then you tell it out loud and no one laughs. That's kind of like Players Weekend.
So do you think that the players wanted this, or that this was more on, like, the commissioner or the owners? Because you seem to suggest that, like, this is some sort of, like, scheme by ownership to sell personalities.
Yeah, are you saying, like, do I think that the players had any say in this thing?
I'm saying, or, like, do you think that this is motivated more by the players or by the idea of selling individuality?
Oh, 100% ownership. This all stems from the idea that, like, in baseball, the biggest personality is Mike Trout, or the biggest players, I should say. Guys like Mike Trout just really don't have marketable personalities. Like, Bryce Harper's the only one who really breaks that mold in terms of the big names. So I think this is just a step by Major League Baseball to try and forcefully inject some more personality into the game.
So you would rather them use nicknames that the fans don't have to look up? Or yeah. Do you just think the whole thing is a joke?
I guess I would rather... I don't know. I think the whole thing kind of sucks. I think they should do something else. I like the idea of custom stuff, but...
I think you hate fun.
I am a Patriots fan, so by default, I do hate fun.
No days off.
I don't know. I enjoy it for the most part. It's different. I like the cheesy jerseys. I like the strange nicknames. They're fun. I just, Keaton and I are just wrote some words about nicknames for Sports the website, and I don't know. I enjoy it. I enjoy any time that players get to express themselves, no matter how obscure or weird or terrible the story might be behind their nicknames.
Yeah, I like it. And I like that they've gone all out with the accessories this year, too, because they've got the socks. And I remember they did cleats last year. I can't remember if they did bats or not, but they've let them go completely all out this weekend, and I enjoy it, and I enjoy all the nicknames. The one thing that bugs me about it is I hate that the jerseys are pullovers and they're not button ups. I don't know why that bothers me so much, but it does.
Did you see the border on the V-neck of the Red Sox jerseys last night? It was like racing striped. It was pretty interesting.
Oh, it was like the three stripe with the white in the middle?
Yeah, it was actually very 80s. I liked it. So that's one thing I like, Patrick. And I liked Mookie Betts' cleats.
Yeah, I mean, all the accessories are definitely awesome. I wish that that was more of an everyday occasion, like occurrence. But I'll take the random players weekend, although I will say I do agree with you that it is probably more ownership, like sort of probably their idea, and the players enjoyed it. I don't know. It's weird.
So jumping into live action reactions, Patrick, what do you have?
Yo, so you'll never guess, but there's an Oakland Athletic that I kind of like, have a thing for a little bit. His nickname is Noodles, and I have no idea the origin behind it. So Roman Laureano, outfielder for the Oakland Athletics, he's 24 years old. He came over to Oakland from Houston last year because he was going to be a Rule 5 draft pick. He needed to be on the roster, so they moved him for an arm from the A's. And he led the league in the minor league in on-base percentage in single A, and then moved up to double A and succeeded. But then the next year, when he did a full season at double A, he had a rather bad year. And Ramon, then when he got over to the PCL and the Oakland Athletics, all of a sudden he started doing everything right again. And he's had one hell of a cool first week. I don't know if you guys saw the amazing assist he had from the outfield where he doubled up a runner at first. He did this, he caught this ball and then was able to show off this incredible arm. Did either of you guys see that?
Nope, but it sounds amazing.
Yeah, I didn't see it either.
I definitely recommend looking it up. It's pretty cool. And I wrote him up for a fresh take, so that'll be coming out this week with more detailed analysis. But I like what he's doing. He's got quick hands, generates elite line drives, both in the minors and doing it at the majors as well. He's also really fast, which I don't enjoy speed all that much. But when you have a good eye like he does, then yeah, I'm in. Biggest problem with him though is that he swings and misses a lot, but you know, that's my kind of guy.
Patrick, what do you think his ultimate ceiling is? What do you think? What do you think of this whole package?
So I would say his ceiling is 15 home runs and about 30 stolen bases with strong OBP. I wouldn't expect a lot from the batting average, probably 260, 270 at most. Although a lot of I've seen other websites report that they think that because of his quick hands that he's actually going to hit for average. I just haven't seen him do that. Although he has put up strong numbers for average in the minors. Just because of how much he strikes out, I don't know if that's really a strong possibility.
Sounds usable.
Jake, what's your live action reaction?
Okay, so as probably most of the people on the podcast know, when I watch baseball, it's usually just the Red Sox. So I usually have live action reactions about teams that the Red Sox recently played. And one of those teams is the Cleveland Indians. And Cody Allen, man, I have to talk about Cody Allen because he has had a really subpar season this year. The guy's got like a 4.50 ERA. Not great. Walking too many guys like normal for him. But the thing that has really stuck out about Cody Allen is not only the lack of control, but he's not really getting ground balls anymore. He's allowing too many home runs. Overall, Cody Allen is just sort of a hot mess this year. And it's his contract season too, so this is really bad timing for him. And I was looking at his pitch mix, and he sort of reminds me of a poor man's Craig Kimbrell. You know, he's got the fastball and the curveball. That's basically all the guy throws. And his velocity is declining too. So he's gone down from almost 95 in his best years to 93.5 right now, so that matters for a guy like that. So my live action reaction is just investing in elite closers, and this guy was considered elite not too long ago, is stupid, in my opinion. Spend your capital elsewhere, and if you happen to find yourself with an elite closer, trade him when he is elite, so you can get more value and pick up middling guys, because elite closers very rarely win you championships. They usually just flame out like this idiot.
Wow. You know, Jake, I think we wholeheartedly agree on something for possibly the first time besides our mutual love for the Red Sox. And that makes me happy because I think closers are trash. Cody Allen is he's a frustrating player to own. He's always had trouble with the long ball, and that's not good when you're a closer. He's had the elite strikeouts to keep him, you know, to keep the role, but he's always been kind of a frustrating closer to own.
I think the beginning of his decline was when he gave up a walk-off home run to Christian Vasquez last year. You can't really recover from that.
No,
that's about the worst person you can give up a walk-off to. So, yeah, I agree with you. And I'm glad we agree, Patrick. This is fun. I like this.
One time.
My live-action reaction is Chris Davis, who is now the Major League leader in home runs, which really kind of snuck up on us. J.D. Martinez had J.D. Martinez had a pretty decent lead. Then Jose Ramirez came up to him, and then we were talking about the big MVP debate between Mookie, Ramirez, Lindor, J.D. Martinez, and then all of a sudden, now Chris Davis has the most home runs in the majors. And really kind of quietly has done it. I know, Patrick, you're probably well aware because you watch like every A's game.
Love me the Oakland A's.
He's just been having another incredible year. This is really like the third year in a row. And he still doesn't really get taken all that seriously in fantasy purposes. Probably just, I would assume, because of his average. But this year he's actually has about a 270 average, which is 20 to 30 points higher than it's been the past couple years. So he's being able to contribute in a lot more ways than just power this year. So he's a guy that has just really quietly had quite a tremendous year. And I think that we're probably still going to just continue to overlook him.
I love that guy. I think he's really good. And he seems to, every year in drafts, just slip farther than I think he's going to. I think everybody's just waiting for the fall off, and it just keeps not happening. So how long do you think he's going to be able to continue having seasons like this? Because it's no longer been a short spurt for him. This is the norm.
Yeah, no, it's kind of similar to J.D. Martinez. They're both 30 years old. I would say he's probably got, he's having a better year now. This is probably his best career year. His very first season in the majors, where he only played 50 games, he hit 280. But since then, this is the best year that he's had hitting with his slash line. And he's going to have, 45-plus home runs on the season. I'd say we're looking at least two more years of this. And he can probably sustain it a little bit further beyond that.
Yeah, you know what's crazy is you look at his line, right? And the first thing that pops out to you is a 314 ISO. And you're like, oh my goodness, that can't be sustainable. But then you look at a full season from the year before, and he rocked 281. And you look at the season before that, and he rocked 277. The dude is just, Jack and the Beanstalk, crazy strong. I don't know, that's not the correct reference. But my point being, he's a very strong man. He's awesome. He hits the ball in the air 48% of the times, almost 50% of the time the ball's in the air, not counting his line drives. Yeah, he's fantastic.
I really like your Jack and the Beanstalk thing with him. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
But
thank you.
I think Chris Davis, too, just to kind of wrap up my thoughts on him, he's sort of the poster child for not looking at war when you're analyzing, how good a player is. And I think that one of the things that even as fantasy players you can get lazy about is if you're just like, oh, war is a good metric as to why people are good at baseball, and then you just look at that and you realize he's sort of like an average player by that metric because his defense is, you know, not great, and there's all these other things. But, you know, counting stats matter, and those are basically the only things that matter for fantasy, and he has lots and lots of good, beautiful, juicy counting stats.
I agree with you again.
Stop that. Stop it.
Either Jack and the Beanstalk or just the Beanstalk should have been his player's weekend name.
Yeah, I would have been a fan. Can you imagine that origin story? I bet it would have been fantastic.
The minor league. Call-ups and emotions. So Taylor Ward, called up by the Angels. Catcher, third base type, number 216 on Jesse's most recent 240. Dom Smith sent down by the Mets in favor of Jay Bruce. Bryce Wilson called up and then demoted after a spot start. But pitched pretty well. 5 innings, 3 hits, 3 walks, 5 Ks. Pretty good. And Michael Kopech made his debut last week, which I was lucky enough to be at. And he had 4 strikeouts in 2 innings and a rain-shortened outing, but didn't give up any runs. So he looked pretty darn good. And I was excited that his debut was in Chicago so I could go see it.
He looked filthy. I wish I owned him anywhere.
There's some people that were getting a little ahead of themselves and comparing his fastball movement to Kluber, which I think is a little much, but he's pretty good.
You mean we can't declare him the next Corey Kluber after 2 innings in the majors? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're implying?
I know we like to extrapolate from small sample sizes, but that's one I would hold off on for now.
All right, fair enough, I guess. Jake, you have any Kopech thoughts?
I like Kopech enough. I really like his stuff. I guess I'm just there are certain things I value when I look at players, and one of them is ability to know where your pitches are going, and I still think that there's a lot of work to be done in that regard for him. I think that'll get there eventually, but this is not a guy that I would draft like heading into next year with the intention of him being an important part of my fantasy rotation. Even if he like breaks camp with the team and he's going to start, I think it's going to take a couple years for this thing to fall into place, and there is still some potential that he doesn't get it to fall into place and he ends up being like a late inning guy.
In Kopech's 7 previous starts before he was called up, he had amassed 74 strikeouts to 4 walks. So he may have figured that out. Again, small sample size. It was only like 40 something innings or whatever, but yeah.
Yeah, he certainly could. I caution against using minor league numbers for that, especially with guys that have that powerful of a repertoire, because you're going to be able to overpower guys to the point where, you know, not having the best command, and he definitely has control at this point, but the command part is what he's still working on. So I guess I take a wait and see approach with these guys a little bit more.
So Patrick, you have thoughts on Taylor Ward?
Yeah, I think he is a pretty interesting player. So he is one of the better pop-up prospects from this year. He really didn't come in with much of any hype at all, but had quite the breakout in both AA and AAA this year, posting strong ratios, which he actually has done in the past, but he bumped up his ISO and started hitting home runs. And so you're talking about strong on-base skills and pop at the catcher position, at least for this year, because they've been playing him primarily at third base. So third base is kind of a wasteland in itself, too. So I still think he's valuable, and I think he's someone that should be owned in, I think I would say every Dynasty League he should be owned.
Yeah, and Bryce Wilson's actually a guy that's kind of gotten a little lost in Atlanta's system with just the sheer volume of arm talent that they have. He's a guy that I scooped up in a league in the beginning of the season just because he had a pretty decent year last year and was in Atlanta's system. and he ended up making it all the way from A-ball to the majors this season, which is pretty impressive. He's 20 years old, and he has 139 strikeouts in 123 innings across all three levels of the minors so far this season. He's got some pretty good stuff, and he's a guy that you may not want to lose track of in just the impressive farm of the Braves, because they just have incredible depth.
Yeah, I agree with you, Keaton. The Braves are probably one of the best, if not the best, organizations at developing pitchers and actually getting the most out of these guys. And the fact that he has made it to the major leagues by the age of 20 and still isn't even really on the radar with some of their other prospects is pretty amazing. And I do expect him to be a pretty useful piece.
All right, now moving on to everyone's favorite section, the top prospect. Who wants to go first? Let's do Jake.
Okay. The only caveat to this is I still don't know how to pronounce my guy's last name. I think it's Nitzner? I don't know. Nitzner? How do you guys want to say that?
Nitzner works. That's good enough for me.
Nitzner? All right. So my guy is Andrew Nitzner. He is a catcher in the St. Louis Cardinals Devil Magic system. He was recently promoted to AAA. He started the year in AA this year. And basically the thing that I love about this guy is that he was outside of the Dynasty Top 101 on BP. He's not a guy that is super widely known or owned. And even coming into this year, he wasn't even the catcher to own in the minor leagues in that system because of Carson Kelly, who is not as good as him. But basically, this guy has a great hit tool, which is the thing that I always bet on when I'm looking at prospects. I think that's the most important thing, especially with the ball flying out of the park the way that it does these days. He batted over 300, has really strong OBP, has a little bit of power as well. It's more doubles power right now, but I love everything about this guy, and it seems like he might even have a chance to potentially get a September call-up. And the defense has improved too, which is super important, because Yadier Molina is not going to be around forever, despite him wanting to. But you know, this guy to me is the heir apparent at catcher in St. Louis, not Carson Kelly. And he's only owned in 6% of Fantrax leagues, which typically has higher ownership percentages for prospects than other leagues. So there's a good bet that in your ESPN or Yahoo or whatever, he is very low on the ownership scale. So I just really like the whole package here, and I think he has a chance to become a top 10 dynasty catcher within the next, let's say, 2-3 years. So if I'm rebuilding, he's someone I'm looking at.
I super agree with that. Also, Baseball Reference says it's Kisner.
Kisner.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's easier to say.
All right. Kisner has improved his defense a ton. And it's... did he get called up earlier in the year when Molina got hurt?
He has not been called up yet.
Yeah. I remember digging into him because I thought that there was a chance that was going to happen because... I believe at the time, Kelly was hurt, and then Molina took 104-mile-an-hour fastball to the balls, and it looked like Kisner was the next man up from Double A, just because that was who was left in their system. And he's just had a really incredible year, and I completely agree with everything that Jake said. He's a really good guy to just put on your team. I've stashed him in a couple leagues. I have one league where I'm currently rostering 6 minor league catchers, which is a little excessive, but I get excited about them, so I go a little overboard.
I would actually say that he is the second best catcher prospect in baseball right now. I think the only guy above him for fantasy purposes is Danny Jansen, and he is now a major leaguer.
I'm a big fan of Joey Bart. I think Joey Bart is ahead of them both.
I like Varshu. I would put Varshu actually ahead of both of them.
You have talked about him extensively. You love him.
I do love him. But you've also talked about Joey Bart extensively, mostly on Twitter, though.
I have. That's true. All right, Patrick, who's your guy?
So my dude is Mark Vientos. He is playing in rookie ball right now for the Mets. So I know that's a scary proposition, the fact that he is with the Mets. He's 18 years old. He got a signing bonus of $1.5 million, so I was definitely curious, because that's a rather large bonus for you know, a player, so I checked him out. He's currently at shortstop, but from what I've read, he's probably going to grow into a body that's too big to play there, and he'll move to third base, and he'll kind of grow to be your prototypical power-hitting third baseman. So there's a lot of power potential here that he's already flashing in rookie ball. He's already hit 11 home runs in 234 plate appearances. He's rocking an ISO around 200, which is always something I like to see. And then double-digit walk rate and a pretty low strikeout rate, 15.8%. Now, it's rookie ball, so who knows? But whenever I see that kind of production at that low a level, that means that his stock is going to rise dramatically. And who knows what happens in the higher levels, but I'm in. Also, I attached a video, and I'd suggest for Keaton and Jake, if you would like, to check it out and try to listen to it with the sound, because the sound of the bat is pretty freaking awesome.
My guy is Vidal Bruján, 20-year-old second baseman for Tampa Bay, international signee, signed for only $15,000, and he actually signed after the July deadline. He ended up signing later in the season in about October, but this season, he's slashing 327, 412, 465 with 8 homers and 54 steals. And even more impressive is he has 61 walks to 60 strikeouts this season. And that's not a one-season blip from him. So he's been in the minors for 4 seasons now, and he has accumulated 148 walks to 128 strikeouts. So he has 20 more walks cumulatively in the minors than he does strikeouts. That's incredibly impressive. And for a 20-year-old in the Midwest League, what he's doing right now is just absolutely tremendous. And Bruján is a guy that I believe we had a listener question on him maybe like a month ago. And I was pretty excited about him. It was a guy that was asking us who he should keep in his farm. And I said that Bruján was one of the guys that he should definitely keep. I thought now was a good time to go back and just kind of see how he was doing. And I was actually kind of floored by how well he was doing. I didn't even realize he was doing this well. But to have that many more walks than strikeouts over the course of the minors and still be doing that now in the Midwest League while stealing just a crap ton of bases, hitting for average, hitting for power, this is a guy that I'm super excited about.
Yeah, I didn't really know about this guy. And looking at his numbers, this is definitely my type of guy. I'm really impressed by that, especially the strikeouts to walks. That's really what I look for in prospects. I love guys with good hit tools, and you know, the speed thing's cool. I'm always a little skeptical of minor league speed numbers because the defense is just shit. But clearly the guy's an athlete, and the Rays do a good job too. So yeah, I like this guy.
If you're interested, you could try and trade for him from me in TDGX too.
Didn't we pass the deadline?
There's an offseason coming up.
Ah, I'm looking forward to that. After I win.
I was going to say that would make for a great transition. So
So let's hurry up and vote.
Yes, I'll submit my vote, and I will also vote for Bruján. I'm excited about him, and I can't get behind Kisner, is that, I believe, how we decided we're going to pronounce it.
Why? Because he's a catcher?
Yeah.
Well... Wow.
That's obviously, you guys know that's where my vote's going. So.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Bruján as well, because I actually don't like your guy at all, Patrick. So screw you.
Well, whatever. I'm going to tweet. By the way, I'll tweet out that video on the Dynasty Child Twitter account, at Dynasty's Child. I'll tweet out that video if the listeners want to check it out too.
Or if you want to wait 6 years for a prospect to make it.
Boy, oh boy, somebody heartbreak, it feels like. That's a vicious revenge kind of...
My first win. This was really important to me, and you've robbed me of it, so there you go. You've drawn my ire.
Well, You don't think it was my excellent prospect choice that robbed you of it?
It was a combo.
Thank you.
I mean, I can't lie and say I'm not, I mean, a little bit happy to see that you're 0-2.
Fine. All right, Fantasy League. So before we get into our in and out portion, we want to talk to Jake, who is currently in first place, I believe, in the TDGX2 League. But there is a whole bundle of people. I think we have 5, all within one game of each other at the top of the standings. This is going to be a really, really fun stretch run. So, Jake, why don't you give us a little bit of overview of your team and some deadline moves that you made, and why you think you're going to win.
Okay, so first of all, this logjam at the top is really interesting. I am not in first place anymore. I've been in first place most of the year, but I'm a half game behind Nick Dorn for the lead now. And going into last week, the top 5 teams were separated by a game. Now we have 6 teams at the top. 6th and 5th place are 7 games back. 4th and 3rd are 4.5 back. So it's looking more and more like a 2-team race between Dorn and I to see who gets the title. But I think the interesting thing about this year and why I kind of think I'm going to win the league, well, I definitely think I'm going to win it, but is basically because of my pitching. I've made a lot of really interesting trades this year that have netted me some really impressive pitchers. One of them I want to talk about, I traded Danny Salazar before his shoulder surgery, and Heliot Ramos, who had just crazy helium, no pun intended there, for Zach Greinke earlier in the season. Traded Cal Quantrill for Adam Ottavino, who's had an amazing season. And then I also acquired Jacob deGrom and Kyle Freeland in a deal for Michael Wacha, Dylan Cease, Ryan Mountcastle, Andrew McCutcheon, and Esteban Quiroz. And then I flipped Freeland to you, along with some quality prospects in Kevin Smith and Jojo Romero in a first-round pick for Madison Bumgarner. So essentially, I've taken my team and added 3 aces to Justin Verlander, who was my only ace at the beginning of the season. So it's a 20-teamer, and now I have DeGrom, Greinke, Verlander, and Madison Bumgarner all on the same team. And when I drafted my team, I went with a super offensive-heavy approach. I went with Jose Ramirez as my first pick, followed by Anthony Rizzo. And then I also drafted guys like Jose Abreu and Edwin Encarnacion to fill out those utility spots, and Marcelo Ozuna. So I've had some guys who had really good seasons, but I've also had some players who have had really bad seasons. So, but by and large, I feel really good about my offense, and my pitching, I think, has now become a strength after being a weakness of my team. And also, I was able to find a little guy named Juan Soto in the draft this year, who's been a little helpful.
Didn't Patrick spend like a month and a half trying to get Soto from you?
He was met with early and fierce resistance on my end of, no, I will never trade him.
Not surprised. Yeah, this TDGX2 so far this year has been super fun. I'm glad that it has panned out the way that it has. Because there's going to be a lot of interest kind of seeing how this ends up shaking out in the end.
Yeah, I am. I can't wait to see where I end up in the standings. I'm very excited to see how competitive my team is here down the stretch. I'm only 72 games back of Jake, so I feel like I've got a chance, but maybe not. I will say, I really enjoy your team. It's quite good. I actually like the haul that Keaton got for Bumgarner. I know he's coming off a rather good start against, you know, the Mets, the fearsome fighting Mets. But there is some real red flags with him. And I'm a bit worried about Madison Bumgarner and his ability to pitch like an ace going forward. So I don't know if I'm as confident as you about that particular acquisition, but can't argue with DeGrom and Verlander, Greinke. Yeah, I would say you're in good shape here going into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think the Madison Bumgarner thing is really interesting. And this isn't the only league where I've seen him moved recently. And I guess I'll talk about my thought process a little bit for why I decided to kind of go after him. And I understand completely why people are looking to trade him right now. My thing is with Bumgarner is that we all know about his elite past. We also know that this is a guy who has not succeeded based on things like velocity. He's more of a deception guy. He has that strange delivery. And all of his injuries that he's had have been sort of weird one-off injuries. So what I was betting on here is that, sure, I was giving up some quality prospects and picks right away, but what I was taking the risk in doing is, you know, I have some older guys on the team. I have guys like Verlander and Greinke who hopefully they'll be good for a while, but I don't know how long they're going to be good. And I'm hoping that with a full off season to kind of get back next year, that we're going to start to see a couple more seasons of vintage Bumgarner. So it was a calculated gamble on my part, but I think it's one worth taking if you are someone in a position like I am in this league where you're going to be contending for the next few years. I'd 100% recommend gambling, missing out on some young key prospects to give yourself a chance at having another ace for the next three seasons.
Yeah, that's pretty fair. My motivation was I was sinking in the standings after being in first in the beginning of the season. And he was, I mean, outside of a couple bats that I had that I was not going to move, he was my most expendable asset. And I was just looking to see what I could get to add some pieces to a contention cycle a couple of years out. And I really like Freeland and what he's been able to do. And I'm kind of buying into him, so I thought that was a pretty solid young major league piece to get, plus a couple prospects and a first-round pick. Thought that was pretty fair value for the calculated risk that you were taking, so I think it was a pretty good deal.
Here, here. Good deal.
I agree. I think it was a good deal for both of you. I agree with the calculated risk aspect of Bumgarner and the position that you're in, Jake. For me, it's just now we've seen a year of him not being able to be the pitcher he was with decreased strikeout rate and higher indicating ratios like FIP, XFIP, Sierra. And, you know, a decline in swinging and miss as well. So all those things kind of worry me. I mean, he's managed to be successful so far. He hasn't really had any, you know, terrible, terrible games, I don't think. So we'll see. I'm actually hopeful that in the off season, maybe he'll do some more rehabbing of his shoulder and strengthen it. So, yeah, it's an interesting risk. Good luck, my friend.
Thanks, dude.
So moving on to our in and out series, we're on to outfielders. So for those of you whose trade deadlines have not passed, here are some outfielders to target if you are competing down the stretch and some outfielders to target if you are rebuilding. So I'll go first. My guy is Trey Mancini. He's a guy that we talked about a few pods ago as a second half bounce back. And would you believe it, he's bouncing back. So his first half was he slashed 216, 292, 363 with 12 homers, 9% walk rate, and 25% K rate. Walk rate was pretty good. K rate was a little high. And the rest of his slash line was a little borderline. But one of the things that we pointed out to watch was that his BABIP was incredibly low compared to his career average. It was at 260 versus a career average of 320. Or, sorry, 318 was his career. And since the second half, he's been slashing 288, 320, 449 with five homers. Walk rate has dipped to 5%, but his K rate has also dipped 6% down to 19, which is really good. And his BABIP has gone up to 320, so it's right at his career average, and now we're seeing that kind of play out in a slash line. So his overall stat line still isn't incredibly appealing because of just the poor first half that he had, but he's been killing it so far in the second half, so because his overall stat line isn't as sexy, he's probably a guy that you could go get at not an incredible price and just continue to ride his success through to the end of the season. And then you have yourself a nice, decent fantasy asset because he's only 26 years old. So that's the guy that I would go get. And I have gone and gotten him in like four different leagues. So, Patrick, who's your guy?
Well, my guy is Nick Williams, but I just wanted to quickly touch on Mancini because he's a player I've looked a lot at. And I was recently doing an AMA on Reddit, and there was a user, I'm sorry, forgive me for not being able to remember your username, but he pointed out that Mancini has essentially mirrored Jose Martinez's production here in the second half. He's really picked it up, and I am really intrigued with him as well. I was a bit wrong on him. I was down more down on him than you. I do worry about the ground ball rate, but I just wanted to say, I wanted to give you the hat tip here, the W, if you will, that you were, I think you might be right about him. I think he might be pretty good.
Thanks. I will take it.
Yeah.
Won't be the first time.
Yeah, exactly. You're happy to take W's, as am I. All right, so let me quickly touch on my, a guy, he could actually be for rebuilding as well, but I put him here for guys down the stretch, and that's Nick Williams. He's really cut his chase rate, which is the thing that's kind of kept him from reaching his true potential. But he's really cut his chase rate, and now he's rocking a strong X slugging, X batting average, a strong WOBA and X WOBA with an elite line drive rate and above average exit velocity. So I'm really interested in what Nick Williams could be, both towards the stretch run here at the end of the season, and also what he's going to be next year, assuming he is able to steal the lion's shares of playing time in Philadelphia. Oh, Jake, who's your dude?
So I just want to say first, I like both of your dudes, and especially I have to give credit to Keaton here with Trey Mancini. I really like what he's done in the second half, and he's one of the few Orioles that you actually have to pay attention to when he's in the box. So, yeah, interesting player.
This couldn't be any worse. We both just gave Keaton credit. This is awful. This is code red.
Yeah,
code red.
We should really.
Everybody run
and
take
I
this
won
back.
The top pod spec. This is a great day.
God, what is happening? This is
it's
awful.
Only because you're sick, Keaton. That's the only reason why we're taking pity on you.
And I don't care. I will take it.
So I cheated a little bit on this. I went with a philosophy, which if you have followed me in my writing at all over the last like 6 years, I am all about old dudes. And I recently acquired two old outfielders for my stretch run in TDGX, in Eric Thames, or Thames, or however you say it, and Adam Jones, who are not sexy names, but in a 20-team league, these are very, very useful players. And basically, when you're in a dynasty league, and this is known, everybody who's over 30 is looked at as sort of like this, you know, leper of a player, even if they're good and they still do useful things. And especially the further away they get from 30, the less and less desirable they become. So what I've found is that I've been able to have a shitload of success from a fantasy standpoint from just loading up on old effective bats. And, you know, a guy like Adam Jones, I acquired not to be a starter for me, but to be depth because he's a durable guy and he plays every day. Thames, on the other hand, has been really good when he's been in the lineup. He hits for power, you know, the average is there, he drives in runs. There's a lot of good things about these players, and I just want to steer people towards old players because the difference between trading one or two prospects and a guy who's in his prime or maybe a guy with some upside and loading up on a few of these old productive guys is often the difference between winning and losing your championships. So I still just think it's a super underappreciated area in Dynasty, and old dudes need more respect.
Could not disagree more with you on this point, Jake.
Explain.
Well, so my whole thing with Dynasty Baseball is that you want to create a dynasty. You basically want to break your league. You want to make it so that you have this dominant team, not for only, you know, a couple years, but you really want to dominate. You want to create a dynasty. You want to be competitive for like 10 years. You want to crush. And when you sell out for older players just to make the stretch run to win, I feel like subtracting value from your team, you know, selling, you know, prospects whose stocks are going to rise and investing them in older players, I don't think is a wise idea unless they're really prospects that you don't believe in. I don't think owning old players, I mean, there's a reason that aging curves exist. And it's because when you get old, you can't fight science and you just stop being able to play baseball as well.
Tell that to Tom Brady first. But second, I agree with Jake here. It's not going to take much to get guys like Adam Jones and Eric Thames. So you're not going to give up like top 10, top 20, top 30, maybe even top 50 prospects to get them. And prospects have such an incredibly high bust rate as it is. Example, Byron Buxton. You probably wouldn't be able to trade Buxton now for really anything, whereas 3 years ago you could have demanded the world and got it. So selling outside the top 50 prospects for old bench depth to solidify your squad in going for a title, like Thames and Adam Jones are going to be good for the next 2, maybe 3 years as assets. To have, as Jake stated, not as starters, but as players to have on your team to solidify your depth. That's perfectly fine. I have no problem with that at all. That's a great strategy to use. If you just continue to go after young guys and the aging curve, you're going to be giving up more for value that may end up busting at this in the same rate in 2 years as you would get quality at bats and stats from Thames and Adam Jones. So I don't have a problem with it at all. I kind of have the same philosophy as Jake here, that when I have a team that's ready to make a run and contend for 2 or 3 years, I do the same thing. And I look for guys that are like 30 to 34 who are just rock solid, give up a late pick, decent ish prospect to add them to my team for a couple years. And I'm totally on board with that philosophy.
Yeah, I was going to try and explain it exactly how you did, Keaton, but you did it perfectly. So, yeah, you did a great job of spelling out all the reasons why Patrick is both wrong and in last place in our league and will continue to be as long as he sticks to this philosophy. So, yeah, you just got owned, Patrick.
Yeah, we'll see. Enjoy your one victory this year.
Well, it's going to be one more championship than you'll have.
Yeah, also, it's not like to do this strategy, I'm selling guys like Juan Soto. You know, to do this, like Keaton said, I'm selling marginal picks or I'm selling players who have a low chance at being impact major leaguers to people who are going to, you know, take a chance on their success. But let's not forget, in dynasty leagues, your currency is prospects and your currency is draft picks. So if you are consistently buying more currency in favor of, in lieu of, I should say, chasing actual value, you are not going to do very well.
Yeah, I just don't agree with, I mean, I agree with the logic of like them having them as bench pieces, not peaches, although they could be great people. They could be peach people. But that's not what I'm saying. Like, I just think that I'd rather spend the currency that has earned its value, that are top 50 prospects, and invest in younger MLB talent, no matter what. I just would rather have young bats reaching their peak production pretty much at the same time.
The thing I'll say about that, Patrick, is I don't disagree with the idea behind it. I just think that it is way more challenging to project when young players are going to come into their own than it is to project guys who are already good and productive players to be able to project how long they're going to continue to be productive. So in the perfect world, you're right. Like you get a bunch of these young guys and they all come to fruition and they all pan out all at the same time and everything's great and you have a 10-year stretch where you're just a powerhouse. But oftentimes the progress of prospects and young players is not linear, and they go up and down and bust and all these different things. So I think in dynasty leagues, your unknown is the young players in many regards, and your known quantity is the older players. That's your stability. So it's sort of like your philosophy, if we're going to get into like financial planning, would be just to go as aggressive as possible. And my older player strategy gives us a little bit of balance against the market risks.
Yeah, I just don't assess older players the same way that you do. Just because I think that there's just as much a likelihood that they'll drop off in their production as there is to say that a young player is going to have ups and downs.
Well, every league needs people that are going to be at the bottom, so.
Jesus. Well said. Moving on to the rebuilding portion, as I spiral into a coughing fit, Patrick, who's your guy?
My rebuilding dude. Who is my rebuilding dude? Yordan Alvarez, 21-year-old outfielder for Houston. He's a big, beefy boy, 6'5", 225 pounds, and the dude smashes. At least he has in AA and AAA this year. He's provided you with a nice ISO over 200, 19 home runs between the two levels so far. Fangraphs slapped a 65 on his raw power. And what's great about all this raw power is that it's coming with a double-digit walk rate across four different levels in the minor leagues. The K rate is a concern. It's in the 20s, but this is a dude that's 21 years old, and that makes him 5.5 years younger than his peers in AAA, and he was almost 3 years younger than his peers in AA. So, yeah, I think that I'm head over heels. I've said that I would take him over Fernando Tatis, and I hold true to that. I love him.
I super disagree that he's better than Fernando Tatis, but I am a little maybe irrationally attached to these young crop of middle infielders. But Tatis is, nah, you're wrong. He's good. All right, my guy is actually another guy that I'm a little irrationally attached to, and that's Manny Margot. Margot had a really bad start to the season, but he's kind of he was hurt for a bit, and now that he's healthy, he's been doing Manny Margot things, getting steals, not striking out a ton, walking at a decent enough clip. He's still only 23, and what gives me the most hope that he's going to turn out to be the guy that I hope he will is his exit velocity is above average, his launch angle is average, and his hard hit rate is actually well above average at 36.7%. He's making very, very good contact. And being still only 23, he's a guy that is still going to have years left to develop at the major league level, but he's having success there already and hitting the ball really hard. So he's a guy that I would invest in now because his stock now probably is as high as it was a year or two ago. But he's still a guy that I believe is going to grow into the top prospect that we saw him as just not long ago. So he's a guy that I would go get and have gone to go get in a couple leagues because I'm still just super into Manny Margot and hoping that he'll be the player that I want him to be.
I like both of your players. I like Margot's hit tool quite a bit, and I like his speed. But I think that out of those two guys, Yordan Alvarez has a little bit of a safer offensive profile, which is why I'd probably prefer him out of those two. But my guy is Nomar Mazara, who is getting lots and lots of disrespect and hate from people on this podcast as well. Adam and Patrick both don't like him. He's having a terrible year, I will say that. It's not terrible, but for where people drafted him, it's sort of terrible. He's got 16 home runs, 60 RBIs. He's batting .266. He's only getting on base at a .327 clip, and he's slightly above average with a 104 WRC plus on the season. But I want to remind everyone that this is a former top five prospect and that he is 23 years old. Not only is he 23, he's younger than the prospect that I wanted to be the top prospect on this podcast in Andrew Kisner by a couple months. So he's still freakishly young. He's been in the major leagues for now 3 seasons, playing pretty much every day and learning on the fly. And the tools are just still super loud. And I want to say this. We saw what happened to Cole Hamels after he left the hellhole that is Arlington this year. And I think that it's just a really miserable place to be right now because the Rangers are going nowhere fast. And I don't know. I think this is the time to buy. You got to get in on guys like this when their stock falls a little bit and there's still just a shitload of reasons to like him, from power to hit tool. And I think the patience will grow as the years go on. So I love him.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, the last time you were on, Jake, it was during Nomar Mazzara's hot streak when he was hitting all those home runs. And we both kind of agreed that, like, if there was a time to kind of sell on him, that it might be time, like, it would be a good time to sell on him. And that has definitely proven to be true because he has dramatically fallen off from then. So, yeah, no, I don't agree with you. He hits too many ground balls for me.
Is he too old for you, Patrick, at 23?
No, it's the appropriate age. He's just not very good.
All right. So for the three of you, this is the grab bag for in or out, and I want to get a reaction from you guys. An outfielder in Arizona is having an absolute breakout year at the age of 31. David Peralta. Do you want to guess what his OPS is?
So right if you now? Follow David Peralta at all, this isn't a breakout year. This is kind of who he's been. He's pretty good.
No, not plus 900 OPS. This is not usual for him. He's been good, but he has not been this good. Last year, he had a 796 OPS. The year before, he had a 728. And then he's never actually had an OPS higher than 796. He's at a 912 OPS right now.
He had an 893 in 2015.
On a small sample size.
149 games?
I mean, like, I'm talking about a full season. If you don't want to talk about him, that's fine, but I think that...
Is 149 games a small sample size?
In 2016?
15?
517. Oh, I was misreading there. All right, well, fine, Keaton. We don't have to talk about David Peralta.
I really like David Peralta.
I wasn't saying we didn't need to talk about him. I was just saying I've had Peralta as a fourth outfielder in Tino because he's awesome. Because like no one actually realizes how good he is. He's super cheap to get, and he puts up awesome numbers like this. Like, this is by far his best power season, for sure. But he flirted with 300 last year, hit 312 in 2015, in that year that apparently Adam was just forgetting. He has a 296 career average, so he's, you know, his slash line is pretty similar to his career run right now. It's not, he's doing better because he's had a lot more power, so his slugging is higher, and that's kind of what's inflating it over 900, but he's a great outfielder to have, and a lot of people don't realize it. But Adam thinking that this year is his breakout year kind of proves my point that no one realized how good he's actually been over the past 4 or 5 years, because he's been really good.
Well, he was injured 1 year. His 2015 definitely was good, and I overlooked that, but the previous 2 years have not been as good as this, one of them being marred by an injury. I mean, this is insane production for a 31-year-old to come out. All right.
Patrick, do you want to say something now?
I just wanted to say that he's a fine buy for, like, if you're competing. Can we just agree on that? He's fine. He's a fine buy for if you're competing. Great. Great bench bat. Great fourth outfielder. Fantastic. No?
Was that it?
He's over 31, so I expected you to hate him.
Was that your only grab bag one, just that one dude?
I had two, but I want to move on because we're at an hour 20.
I want to hear who the second one is.
Yeah, I want to hear who it is, too.
I wanted you to talk about Yasiel Puig.
Yeah. I love Puig. He's good. He hits too many ground balls, too, but he's got strong OBP numbers. He's been hitting the ball out of the park lately, and he gets you steals as well. So he's very good.
I've realized that I just hate every player who Patrick likes. So it's really interesting that we have opposite philosophies on pretty much everybody. I hate Puig. He is not good. He is not a good baseball player. He has not been a good baseball player since 2014. I don't know what data you are looking at to back up that he is good in any sort of way.
I have a neutral take on Puig, so I'm not going to be able to be the rubber vote there. between you two. I could take him or leave him, but he's not a guy I would go after.
What is it that you don't like about him? Other than, like, I'll say that he hits the ball on the ground too much, but, like, what? I don't understand. Like, he has 15 home runs. He has 11 stolen bases. He's batting .267, which is not fantastic, but he's only striking out, you know, he's striking out less than 20% of the time, and his OBP is around .330. That's good.
I guess what I don't like about him is that he's only played in over 104 games twice, and that he's usually good for either an injury or to get hurt, or to, like, not produce for stretches at a time. I just find him deeply unreliable. So I wouldn't be comfortable drafting him as like one of my main outfielders. I would be fine with having him as a bench guy. I think it'd be a luxury to have him as a bench guy, but I don't think that he is a legitimate fantasy starter to rely on.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair to note the injuries. Absolutely fair, but I don't think that makes him a bad baseball player. I think he's a great baseball player. And he's certainly fun as hell. I'm all about Yasiel Puig. I wish he would stay healthy. You're right. He has not played enough games, but I'm all about him.
Patrick, you know I hate fun and love old people. So he is neither old or not fun.
Right, when you get off this podcast, you're just going to get on your porch and start yelling at the young children, playing their music too loud and getting on your lawn and such?
Yep. And I'm going to win leagues by doing it.
Burn. All right, well, that'll do it. This has been the Dynasty's Child Podcast, brought to you by... Why does this still say Dynasty Guru Fantasy Baseball Podcast? Stupid Ian in his notes. All right, this has been Dynasty's Child, brought to you by the Dynasty Guru. I've been your host, Keaton DeRocher. You can find me on Twitter at KeatonTDG. Ian, who's not here, you can find him at IanHTDG. He's here sometimes. Jake, you can find on Twitter at DevJake. Thank you very much, Jake, for joining us. This has been a blast, and I definitely think we need to have you back again.
Thanks, guys. This is awesome. Love talking fantasy with you. Ooh, that's my dog saying hello, and that I need to take her out. So, yeah.
Perfect timing. You can find Patrick on Twitter at TheGreenMagnus, and Adam, our wonderful producer man, you can find him at TheStatCastEra. TDG plugs, Twitter for this podcast is at Dynasty's Child, at Dynasty Guru for everything Dynasty Guru related. Join the Facebook group, email us at dynastieschildpod@gmail.com. Do us a favor, rate and review on iTunes, wherever you listen to your podcasts and whatnot. Thanks to Jackie Jade for our cool logo. Lastly, thank you to Caraway for the use of our intro song, Raising the Dead, and our outro song, The Last Song, off their self-titled EP. Go check them out at wearecaraway.bandcamp.com. And that's going to do it. So thank you very much. And always remember, be the best bird dog you can be.
And you're a straight-laced sinner and all that I've got. Kissing me out in the parking lot. Poisonous venom biting down on my lip. You turn and walk away with the sway of your hip. I'm so close to getting what I need. So intent on making my heart bleed. So put some more Vaseline right onto your teeth. You don't want that smile sticking when you're lying to me.